Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of the Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
I called my mom and I was like, I want to do a pageant. And she was just like, what are you talking about? Pageant that had all sizes of women, I'd probably do that too. And I'm sure there is somewhere. I just haven't found it yet. In pageantry, I'm very competitive. I don't know how it's going to work out with Allison, just because I love her so much that win or lose, I'll be happy.
I think it's important to have a pageant for plus size women because women need the opportunity to express themselves. I mean, you either win or you lose, and you have to prepare yourself for that. And once you do that, you're just having a good time.
Our 2011 Elite Queen winner is
Welcome to the Projection Booth. I'm Mike White, your host this week, and joining me, of course, is Mr. Rob St. Mary.
I kind of feel like Burt Parks on this episode.
You should. And joining us is also co-director of There She Is, a documentary that we'll be talking about on this special episode, is Emily Sheskin.
Cool. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the Projection Booth. I'm excited to be here.
So on this special episode, we're talking about There She Is. It is a short documentary, so we'll make this kind of a shorter episode than we normally do. Great documentary, really kind of asks a whole lot of questions. You run what, like 20 minutes on this?
Yeah, it's a 20-minute short film. Originally, we had thought maybe we would make it a feature, and then ultimately felt that the story was better told in a long short, which made things a little tricky for us just because 20 minutes is an awkward length, as you probably know, for festivals. That's kind of part of why we ended up doing an online release, and I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Like I mentioned, you are a co-director. Tell us a little bit about your other half, Veena Rao.
So Veena and I met at NYU Film School. We did study abroad together, and we became friends doing study abroad. We were making narrative short films in Prague, and at the time, I was living in an apartment and I needed a roommate and she needed a place to live. So we ended up living together our junior year of college and then kind of just continued on until recently. And Veena introduced me to documentary and I would come home and I would see her on the couch watching some obscure documentary. And eventually we started talking about making films together. And then as you know, you grow up, you graduate, and you kind of have to find a job in the real world. And we both ended up working at advertising agencies. She mostly does producing, and I'm a video editor. And we talked a lot about how sort of ironic it was that here we were feminist filmmakers, and we were spending our time. She was looking for hand models, and that was like super ridiculous. And I was editing these things where it was, you know, a busty woman kind of talking to camera, being sexy. And, you know, advertising is great in its own way, but we really missed filmmaking and we missed making films. And so we started to do this thing called the International Documentary Challenge. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's totally great. 5 days, you make a short documentary. And 5 days was a perfect amount of time since we both had jobs and we couldn't take off a long stretch of time to make something. And so we started there. We started making documentaries together. 2008 or 2009 was the first one we did, called The Art of Balance, that ended up going to Hot Docs. And we kind of continued to do this. It was a nice way to make films while being employed because, you know, when you work a full-time job, it's hard to dedicate time to make a film. And eventually we talked more and more about making something larger. And we were really interested in ideas of beauty and being in advertising, seeing sort of that one image that's constantly put out. We were really interested as women where these definitions of beauty come from, where our standards of beauty come from. And we found a statistic online that the average American woman is a size 14. And we thought that that was really interesting that here, you know, the average in the U.S. is a size 14, but all we see in the media is size probably 0 to 6. And so we thought, we talked about it more and thought about pageantry as sort of this traditional representation of what is beautiful in America. And we wondered if there were pageants available for the average American woman. So we did a bunch of research, and that's how we found Miss American Beauty's Plus pageant, where Jenny and Allison, the characters in our film, compete. And that's how we got to make There She Is. We both were freelancers at this time, so we had a lot more flexibility in our schedule. And the process of filming it, it took in 2011, after doing a lot of research and talking to them on the phone, we filmed for a month. We did a week with Jenny in Orem, Utah, a week with Allison in Michigan City, Indiana, a week in Georgia, Roswell and Atlanta at the pageant, and then followed Allison back to Michigan City. We spent a year editing, and we continued to talk to them on and off throughout the year. So we kept tabs on them and knew kind of what was going on with their lives. And we felt that it was important to follow up with them a year later. And so we just filmed for a few days, I believe 4 days in 2012, and came back and finished the film. We also did a Indiegogo campaign to raise money for finishing funds, since we had kind of maxed out our budget at that point.
Your film talks about these issues of beauty, with plus size women. There are certain things that they say that are exactly the same thing that you hear coming out of the mouths of, I would say, all women that I've ever been with, and, you know, in my life, be it, you know, mother, girlfriends, you know, friends. And the one that I thought was rather interesting was this feeling with someone who is larger, who is plus size, that they have to take a look at themselves and how they represent when they go to the store or they're anywhere else, because if they're not put together well, then there's a problem, because then they're like, oh, well, of course, because she's overweight, she doesn't take care of herself, so therefore she's just, you know, it's terrible. Look at she's dressed.
Yeah, you know, it was really important for us, even though we were making a film and we wanted, obviously, to showcase voices of women that you don't usually hear. And in this instance, it's plus size women. It was still really important for us to make a film that was really accessible to everyone. And I think, you know, male or female, no matter who you are, we all go through periods in our life where maybe we're self-conscious about the way we look or our weight. And I think that these issues of self-acceptance and body acceptance are universal. So it was really important to make a film that wasn't just sort of only for a certain audience. And then when our character talks about Allison, when Allison talks about how she feels she needs to be put together in order to go to the grocery store, I mean, that is an aha moment, I think, to a lot of people. And it definitely was to me filming. My co-director and I, we're not plus size ourselves. And so I think going through the process of making this film and kind of, you know, we wanted to make something that really allows you to walk in someone else's shoes. And that per line in particular sticks out and stays with a lot of people. And I think it's made me definitely more sensitive about the fact that, I mean, I'm a notorious slob. When Vina and I were filming, both of us were in sort of sweatpants and t-shirts and, you know, our hair was pulled back. We were not wearing makeup and nobody, you know, thought about it. We didn't care. We weren't thinking about it. And so when Allison talked about that and for herself and knowing how she always put herself together, you know, it kind of every day we went out, it was sort of a reminder that we get to do that because of our size, that we don't get looked at funny because of our size. And maybe if we were a different size, that would be different. So we've had a lot of people really respond to that. And I think it's a crucial point in the film. And we had that moment in several different places. And ultimately, we decided on having it close to the beginning of the film, just because we really wanted people to connect with these women. And what we noticed when we were showing people cuts and rough cuts is that there's a lot of prejudice when it comes to size. And people hear, oh, you made a film about plus size women, and they kind of tune out. They think it's just going to be this big is beautiful. Maybe they don't agree. And we've gotten a lot of just kind of off the cuff, you know, gut reactions that aren't necessarily positive. And when somebody actually watches the film, I think what's special about the film is that it allows them to see something from another perspective, and it makes these women become people, and they find something that they can relate to in them. And so, you know, maybe you don't necessarily find bigger women attractive. That's fine. We're not telling you to do that. But maybe you'll think about your own behavior and you'll think, you know, am I that person that gives them a dirty look because they walk in sweatpants? Am I that person that makes these preconceived notions about someone because of their size? Is that fair? And that's always what we wanted to do with the film. We always wanted it to be a conversation starter, and that's what we've seen. So we've been very happy with how it's kind of sparked this discussion online.
How dare you try to humanize these people?
Yeah. I mean, come on, come on.
Horrible, I know. It was really, really important that you connect with them. And we struggled a lot in the edit room. I mean, it's hard to have that perspective and that objectivity when you are on the shoot and you get to know your subjects and you care about them and you think they're great people. And then, you know, I'm an editor in my career, so I'm well aware of how you can shape someone in an edit room. And so, again, it was really important for us to make something truthful and honest that, in my opinion, still was very truthful. And, you know, I didn't want to manipulate what they were saying. And editing can be very tricky, and you want people to be instantly love your characters and be on board with the story and want to see where it goes. And, you know, how do you break down sort of those walls and that bigotry in a film? And I think, you know, we start the film by putting a montage up front where they sort of talk about the insecurity and the need to wear makeup. And I think that honesty and the bravery that these women, you know, of just, our subjects were so brave when we talked to them. They were so honest, and people have really responded to that. They've really responded to the honesty and not just, you know, some BS of, oh no, it's totally fine, I'm fine every day. You know, that isn't what our characters said. They said something that was really human, and it's something that we all can relate to. And I think, you know, a lot of credit goes out to them for allowing us to talk to them in a way that was really honest and share that with the world.
One thing that I was thinking about in terms of representation of larger women, plus size women in TV and film and things like that. I mean, obviously, in the last few years, we've seen Melissa McCarthy and how she's kind of come into her own. But in a way, it almost seems like when we talk about plus size people, larger people, even men within film and television, it seems that they're often played for buffoonery or for humor or in some way. And although it's not necessarily in your film, were there ever any discussions with your subjects in terms of when they look at sort of the media and what's reflected back to them as someone like themselves, how they feel about the representation?
I mean, yes and no. I think you're right that anybody who's fat tends to be in media the butt of the joke. And I think that we've seen people like Rebel Wilson and Melissa McCarthy, who you mentioned, who are incredible actresses and are incredible comedians. And I know that Allison, for example, was talking about how all she wants is Melissa McCarthy to watch the film and like it because Melissa McCarthy is like one of her heroes, you know? And I think that it's a shame that we only see larger people on TV when weight loss is involved. We've got so many weight loss shows. The only time I see plus size people on TV is The Biggest Loser, you know, Extreme Makeover, Weight Loss Edition. Like, there are so many. And in every single time, it's like the message is because you're big, there's something wrong with you and it needs to be fixed. You know, there's now a few shows like Drop Dead Diva, which I absolutely love. It's a lot of fun, and it's not giving off that message that if you're plus size, it's bad. I think the real issue is whether or not you believe that the media affects your life. It does send a message. And I think the media sends a message that if you're big, if you're different, you know, it needs, your problem that needs to be fixed. And that's not fair and that's not right. And that's making an assumption about people that in many times is incorrect. I mean, people are complex, and to kind of summarize an entire group of people, it's not fair. And so when we talked about representation in the media, and I think this was also part of why Allison in particular was so excited to be a part of this project, because she really wanted to be a voice, an honest voice from her perspective of what it was like to be plus size and not be a celebrity. You know, Melissa McCarthy also, I'm going to just bring up the whole Rex Reed thing. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, basically, if somebody is big, it's fair game to sort of talk about their weight and pick at them for, you know, it's like, would Rex Reed talk about like Brad Pitt, I guess, taking advantage of his chiseled features in the same derogatory way? You know, there's this double standard, and it seems like people are completely okay with it. I mean, I think everybody knows that comments can be very hit or miss. And some of the comments on the film by people who clearly haven't watched the film, it, you know, it's just so apparent how much bigotry and hatred there is towards fat people. And it's, you know, Rex Reed did it. It's turned into this thing where this is, in my opinion, almost like the last acceptable social bigotry. You know, if you said anything else about any other kind of person, you'd get in so much trouble for it. But you say something about someone's size and it's okay. It's like living in a culture where it's okay to comment on people's bodies has become the norm, because you go to the grocery store and you see it. You see the best and the worst beach bodies. It's completely ridiculous.
The thing is I really think it has to do with what it represents to people in America, that somehow it represents that you're lazy, that you're, you know, not together in your head, maybe in some way, the way you should be, some sort of moral failing. I mean, the only thing I can kind of equate it to is someone who's an alcoholic or something. It's sort of like, oh, well, of course you have depression. So therefore, of course, you know, it's a failing by you that you look this way.
The bottom line is, it's still a snap judgment and it's still prejudice. I mean, I know plenty of skinny people who are just as lazy, who don't go to the gym, and, you know, they have a great metabolism. I have a friend who tries to put on weight and he's like too lazy to go to the gym and, you know, drink protein shakes, and he's super skinny, but it's like nobody looks at him and is like, you're lazy and you just like to play video games and hang out all day.
I just remember there was this Chris Rock stand-up years ago where he was talking about, you know, in other parts of the world, if you're fat, people are like, how did you do that? That's amazing. It's like only in America will we make people feel bad about that, because he's like, over there, they're starving. And it's like, here, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the bigger issue is just the fact that, and I feel like it's specifically women's bodies. I mean, I know that men's bodies get commented on all the time, but it's like we live in this culture where it's just okay to comment on other people and how they look. And it's kind of confusing to me. It's just, I don't police other people in my everyday life. I don't know what you guys are like, but I'm not going on down the street and being like, oh yeah, no, she's too thin. She's too fat. She's too tan. Like, I don't care. I'm not in a position where I feel I need to care about other people's bodies other than my own. And so the fact that we made this film and so much, you know, that knee-jerk reaction has been, I'm going to make assumptions about these women. They're unhealthy. They'll never be beautiful because they're unhealthy. It's surprising and disappointing that so many people can't see that there's a problem with that.
Well, there is a really troubling spot in There She Is, and I know that it's there for a reason to kind of bring out this issue, is that whole idea of the one contestant getting lap band surgery, and now she's engaged. You know, it was like that he wouldn't engage her until she got the surgery or until she lost the weight. That just tears my heart out.
Yeah, and I talked about this with another blogger who was also really surprised that we included that. And I said that I thought it was really important because, one, you know, it's what happened. It's the truth. And two, I think that Jenny's story is extremely accessible. And I don't fault her. I don't think anybody should judge her decision to do that. I think it's important to remember that we'll never know the ins and outs of a relationship unless we're the people involved. And I don't know. I know that he said hurtful things to her. I know that she forgave him. I know that they love each other and she's engaged. And I think that that's great because she's super happy. And the bottom line is people have been so shocked by that. And I have wondered if those people have ever experienced changing something for another person, whether it be the way they dress, the way they act. I mean, when you like somebody, when you're attracted to somebody, I think it's part of your own self-acceptance and kind of that discovery of where part of feeling good about yourself or part of understanding your own attractiveness. You know, some people, for some people, it's self-acceptance comes from within. And I do think that for many other people, self-acceptance comes from others. And I don't necessarily think Jenny is the first person to do something. And she, to be clear, you know, she didn't get it for Peter. She got it for herself. She got it to be healthy. I think, you know, as a side effect, they became really close because of the surgery. That's what she had told us, that she confided in him. They were best friends at the time. And he was really supportive of her decision. It was a big decision. She was really scared. And he kind of helped her through it. He helped her through her recovery. And they fell back in love. I don't want to judge that experience. And I don't want other people to sort of flame her or him for this happening. But I do think that it's not super uncommon. And I think that you'd be lying to yourself if you're like, yeah, I've never done anything. I've never changed anything about myself to try to attract another person.
In the film, there's two different pageants that are referenced. Obviously, there's the one where you shot at with the American Beauties Plus pageant. And then there was also a reference to the Miss Plus America pageant as well. So can you tell us a little bit about these pageants, sort of like how they started, like where they're based and things like that?
When we first approached this project, we were thinking about following the Miss Plus America pageant. That pageant, I believe, is based in Texas, and it's a little bit bigger than the American Beauties Plus pageant. It's a little bit more well-known, and the thing that we had heard about that pageant, and this is just sort of ironic, was that they don't typically crown someone who's bigger than like a size 18. I haven't followed it closely, but there was sort of that disconnect of you're having a pageant, a plus-size pageant for women who are size 14 and up, yet only the ones that's kind of still are the slimmer ones tend to win. That seems a little weird. And so we continue to do research, and I don't want to knock the Miss Plus America pageant just because I don't know the ins and outs of how they judge their contestants. We never talked with the pageant director about that. We just sort of found all this stuff on the website and talked to a few contestants. But when we found the American Beauties Plus pageant, it was started by this woman, Angela Borelli Howell. And she's always been a bigger, curvier woman. And she got really into pageantry, and she just basically fell in love with it and wanted to start a pageant. She had told us that she saw a lot of things when she was doing pageants that she didn't like. And she thought, if I had a pageant, I would want to do that differently. And so she came up with this pageant, the American Beauties Plus pageant, that's really platform-based, which means it's a lot about who the women are versus how they look. And it's a lot about the community service and the interview that they do with the judges. You know, they obviously want a representative who's poised and good on stage and can answer a question on, you know, on the spot. But at the end of the day, the pageant is really a vehicle to get a bunch of women together, to celebrate these women and, you know, to celebrate sort of their achievements in terms of what they do for their communities. So that's ultimately, you know, she was also super pumped. Angela was super pumped about us coming and doing a film on it. She was super supportive. Anything we needed, any access we needed, she was like, anything you guys want, which as filmmakers made things really easy. And so, yeah, that's how we found the pageant through Allison, who we met from. We had done a bunch of research and we talked to Miss Plus America contestants. We're from New York, so we were talking to people in the New York area. And Allison had competed with another girl And the girl introduced us to Allison. So that's how we found Allison, and she introduced us to Jenny.
When did you finally have like your premiere, and did you have a physical premiere, or did you decide to put it online first? Well, how did that all work out?
We had a cut in 2011 before we decided to go back in 2012. And we had done the thing where we hadn't finished it, but we sent sort of the picture locked sound mix in Final Cut kind of cut to festivals. And we just got a bunch of rejections. And it made us look at the cut, made us look at the film, and be more critical of it. And we thought, okay, how can we make this better? And you know, everything that we talked about with Allison and Jenny, the surgery, the engagement, Allison's disappointment with the year after. And we thought, you know, there's more story here. There's really more to this picture than just this one year in this competition. And so we decided to really, instead of focus more on the pageant, which is what our initial cut was, focus more on the women and their friendship and make it more of a character piece. And so we went back in 2012, shot more, edited more, finally decided on a cut that we felt good about. And we started the process. We sent it to festivals, and we were getting a lot of rejections. And my boyfriend is a bit of a math nerd, and I showed him one of the rejection letters, and he looked at it, and he did the math, and he's like, you realize that based on these numbers, you have an easier shot at getting into Harvard than you do getting into this film festival. And to me, that was like kind of an aha moment, because look, festivals are awesome. Festivals are great. But the bottom line is, especially for shorts, it's so competitive. And a lot of festivals, you know, you get into Sundance and then you're going to have a great festival run, because a lot of festivals are going to want your short because it was at Sundance, because it was at a big festival. And so realizing that we did not have that sort of big festival premiere, and knowing that it's a 20-minute short film and that programmers would much rather, in a way, program four or five-minute shorts, or, you know, we knew it was going to be hard to program. And so we talked about it, and we decided, let's do an online premiere. Let's put the film out for free online during Full Figured Fashion Week in New York City, which is June 17th, and kind of cash in on the buzz or in the plus-size community, and really get it out to people. Because when we, at the end of the day, our audience is not necessarily the audience that goes to film festivals. It's regular people, and it's women all around the world. And we really wanted to capitalize on that. So we did this very untraditional premiere, and it worked out really, really well. Basically, we figured out our audience, and we knew that there was going to be interest in the plus size community. And we also knew that there would be interest in the feminist community, because obviously body image is a hot topic in that community. And so we had an idea that our film has pop culture appeal because people love pageants. I mean, you turn on TLC and you'll see that right away. They have that Toddlers and Tiara show. And pageantry, I think, is something that a lot of people are interested in for whatever reason. And so we wanted to reach out to the pageant community, the plus size community, and the feminist community. And so what we did was we started first with people we knew in those communities. So we were reaching out to friends, asking them to share to watch the film. And just through our own network, we were put in touch with people who are bloggers. And my friend Shannon writes for Huffington Post Women. And she really... my friend Shannon really got the ball rolling. She wrote a piece for Huffington Post Women that basically was like, I'm a woman. I don't know how I feel about pageantry. I don't really like it. But at the same time, I feel like we need plus size women representing other types of beauty. And I say power to them. And that message was really helpful, because we knew that the feminist community was not going to embrace a pageant, because pageantry reinforces, it's about the way that women look. That instantly, that is what they're going to say. Even though this pageant is platform-based, they're still going to say, yeah, but at the end of the day, it's a pageant. So for Shannon to come out on Huffington Post and say, look, I'm somebody who doesn't like pageantry, but I think it's important that these women are doing this, and I think it's important that these kinds of events exist, really got the ball rolling. And from there, we got like three or four articles from within the feminist community that kind of parroted Shannon's message, of course, with their own point of view. But it's like she made it okay to say, I don't like pageants, but I'm still going to write about this film. And so that was where we started. And then once we had gotten press, that led to more press. And it's kind of a snowball effect. The other thing that really helped our online launch was Twitter. When I started this, I would not have considered myself very good at outreach, but I spent hours on Twitter reaching out to people that were at the forefront of these communities. And I made a point to tweet at them things that were on message, on the film's message, but also aligned with the person that I was tweeting at. So Twitter got us an article in Jezebel, which led to over 2,000 views. It got us retweeted by Desiree Hartstock, ABC's The Bachelorette, during the show because she had had a pageant. I heard that she was having a pageant on The Bachelor, and so I tweeted at her about our film, and she retweeted it during the film, and that got us over 400 views. It also got us international coverage. I think a lot of times, especially American filmmakers, we forget that there's a huge world out there. And I started to reach out personally. I would find publications in Australia, New Zealand, England, Ireland, any English-speaking country. I found their publications and I tweeted at the people who either wrote for them or ran them. And as a result, we got a we got covered in Australia. We've had over 3,000 hits from Australia, and we were covered on their morning show, which is like their most popular morning show. So I have a friend who lives in Melbourne, and she wrote to me. She was like, hey, I just saw your movie on like our version of Good Morning America. It was pretty surreal to hear that. And yeah, we got covered by like the Daily Mail in the UK, which I'm heard is a gossip rag, but I'm totally cool with it because I love Andy Murray and he's always in there. So I feel like we're in good company. All of that led to, in 3 weeks, over 20,000 views.
That's pretty amazing outreach there that you were able to get that much attention. And I mean, and obviously for a short, because when I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, this would make an excellent feature. I'm wondering if this is just sort of a, you know, a sizzle reel or something in order to raise the money to do a full feature. And, you know, short films, sometimes they don't have much in terms of legs, because as you were saying, there's so many of them. And it just seems like you might see it at a festival and then they sort of disappear.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, really exciting to think about the time we're in. And I think that there's never been, in a way, a better time to make short film. The challenge is getting your film seen, because it's so much easier for people to make films, which is awesome. I'm all about it. I'm all about people getting their hands on a camera, getting a bunch of people together and making something. Filmmaking is a special collaborative effort, and you know, you put so much time and love into something and you want people to see it. And, you know, in the past, we've been so limited. We've been limited by the technology. We've been limited by budget. We've had all these limitations. And now I feel like I didn't want rejections from film festivals to limit where the film could go. And I think that if I've learned anything from this film, it's that while film festivals are awesome, well, it's always going to be amazing to get your film in a theater and sit with a bunch of people and have that experience and meet other filmmakers, we never would have gotten the amount of views had we just stuck to the film festival route. I think that with the internet and the access that everybody has to it, you know, we live in a really special time where you're not just limited by somebody sitting in a room being like, this would be good in our program, this wouldn't. You know, you can get it out. And we were really surprised. You know, 20 minutes is a long time. We did not necessarily know if people would dedicate 20 minutes of their life to watching our film, even though it was free online. And we found that people were really excited to watch it and were really wanted more. And, you know, we've been asked if we're going to do a feature on it. As it stands now, you know, this is sort of a live alone short, and we're hoping to just sort of use this experience and move on from it and, you know, take all the knowledge that we've learned here with it. I mean, I will say that this definitely got me thinking, but, you know, both Vina and I really want to do a feature film. And, you know, Vimeo just launched their distribution platform. You pay, I think, for a Vimeo Pro account, and you can distribute the film online through Vimeo. And I think that's really exciting, too. And I'm definitely toying with the idea, you know, if I am to make a feature, do I even want to go the festival route anymore? Like, you know, do I want to maybe just keep it online? And we've seen this happen. I mean, I think Indie Game, the documentary, is a great example of something that was a crowdsourced film that went to festivals, but also did self-distribution and was extremely successful at it. And I think the challenge for us as filmmakers is thinking about your film and thinking about how you can be successful, how you can get it to the, to your audience, and how you can distribute it in the most effective way possible.
Both Mike and I, we go to a lot of film festivals. We see a lot of stuff. People send us shorts and various things all the time. And I think that There She is a great piece. And if you don't have 20 minutes to spend, I think you're really missing out.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Part of why we also wanted to do the online release was to get press, because we felt if we had press, then maybe film festivals would want to have us at their festival. And as a result, since doing the online release, we've reached out to a lot of festivals who are really excited about having us apply to their festival and who see the film, even though it is online, as a way to get that conversation started at their festival in an interactive form. Some film festivals who are more traditional be like, look, you put this online, there's no way that you're going to be in our festival. But we've also had plenty of festivals be like, this is very exciting. You guys have gotten amazing press. We would absolutely love to have this conversation at our festival with like our audiences, you know, and we'll find a place to program it. So, you know, it's really kind of the process of doing this has really helped distinguish our film. And yeah, it's open doors in that festival circuit, because I don't want to knock festivals. It's an awesome experience going to a film festival, and it's wonderful being able to share your film with a live audience. That's a great experience.
It's such a different way of thinking about something. You know, it used to be the film festival was what got you buzz, and now you have to get your buzz before you even go to the film festival.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very backwards way of doing things, and we knew it was a gamble, but it was kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, we had gotten a bunch of rejections, and what do you do? You know, do you say, all right, I guess our film's no good, let's just move on? Or do you say, you know what, I think we really have something here? And to festival credit, I have a good friend who's a film festival. She was worked as a film festival programmer for a really long time. She worked for a lot of big festivals, and I talked about the film with her, and I talked about the challenges that it would present to a programmer. So, you know, we knew going in that it was going to be a tough film to challenge. Even if they loved it, it was going to be a tough film to program. It was going to be a challenge to program. So, you know, she's actually the reason that we really were toying with the idea of doing the online premiere. I mean, she had said, you know, if your film's a good film, if it doesn't get in, maybe you should think about putting it online. And so that really got us thinking, because it is frustrating. I mean, as a filmmaker, all you really want is for people to see and enjoy the film.
Right. Yeah. At the end of the day, the more eyeballs you get and the more conversation, the better. Make people think.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, I think, why a lot of us do what we do. You know, nobody makes a film and just like sits in their dark apartment watching it being like, yeah, all right, I'm done. Like, you want people to see it, and you want to get people talking about it. It's an exciting thing. And, you know, what's so cool about the world we live in now is that it's such a global community where, you know, you're able to connect with people literally around the world. I met you guys through the Reddit YAMA that we did. And that was all part of our strategy. And you guys are on Reddit. Look, there's, you know, a lot of nasty things said about bigger people. And so we were a little nervous about putting our film up there. We were a little worried that it was just going to be a troll fest, but we were really happy at the result. And otherwise, you know, had we not done that, I wouldn't be here talking on this podcast. So it's pretty cool how you can use the internet as a tool to really get your film seen by more people who maybe would be outside of, you know, the typical film festival audience.
So what's the next step? Are there any festivals that are planned, or are you just sort of out trying to see where it can go next?
Actually, today we're having our first festival screening at the Indianapolis. It's called Indie Fest. It's the Indie Film Fest. And we were really bummed that we're not able to go. It's in Indianapolis. It seems like it's at a great venue. It's at a museum. And as you may know, Allison represented Indiana in the American Beauties Plus pageant. So she's actually going to the festival with her mom. She is really excited. I told her to take pictures. And we've also gotten a bunch of now local press, like a bunch of Indiana press, which has also been really awesome. And an article went up on IndyStar, which is a newspaper out there. And they also included the full film. They embedded it. And I think we've gotten like 400 or 500 views just from that, which has been really exciting. So I feel like it keeps dying down. And I keep saying to Vina, oh, well, we had a really great run, but I guess it's over. And then something else will happen and the views pick up again. And, you know, it's really great. And so we're thrilled to be having our premiere screening at IndieFest. And then since, you know, all the press has happened, we've reached out to a lot of festivals. And I think, you know, we got to a certain point where we were like, okay, we're not going to continue to apply to festivals. As you guys know, it costs money. We are documentary filmmakers. We are not rolling in dough. And so we were sort of like, all right, we're putting a cap on it. And so since now that we've gotten press, we've definitely reached out to see, you know, if they would be interested, if a possibility of a waiver would be, you know, if a reduced fee, anything. And, you know, as I mentioned, people have been really excited to have us at the festival. So we went, I think, from having kind of waiting around for between 10 to 15 responses from festivals, and now we're waiting for like 50. So that's exciting too. And we're hoping, you know, that it'll play in more theaters and at more festivals.
Obviously, you're still trying to push There She Is. Do you have any plans in the works for future work and when we might be able to see that?
Nothing concrete. Vina and I have been talking about doing something else. We've been talking about doing something. We keep saying that we want to do like another mini doc challenge where we just take 5 days and make something, you know, fun and kind of just make something new. And she has an idea. There's an artist that she wants to do something a bit more experimental. And as an editor that rarely does experimental stuff, I'm excited because that presents a challenge. Vina and I are lucky enough to sort of work full time in film as it is. So I feel like every day I get the opportunity to hone my skills and challenge myself.
For those who want to see the film, because it is available for you to watch, and learn more about you, what you do, and everything, where can they go? What's the website?
Pageantdocumentary.com is where you can see the full film and learn about Vina and myself. My editing reel is available at littlerabbitproductions.com. And you can see some of the stuff I've done. Unfortunately, I worked on a bunch of HBO shows called East of Main Street for Asian American Heritage Month. And it's a bummer. I mean, HBO doesn't let me put up those full shows, but I wish I could share those with everybody. But there are a few like mini docs on that site that are really cool. There's one called Push on my site that I worked with a really talented filmmaker, Justin Meredith, who runs a company called Thornburg and Forster, and it's about the Broadway bomb. Do you guys know what that is? The Broadway bomb is this illegal, basically skateboard race where a bunch of longboarders and skateboarders gather at the top of Manhattan and race down Broadway to the Bull in the Financial District. And it's totally illegal, but it's also super awesome. And he did a 5-minute documentary on that, which was a lot of fun to work on. Cause his buddy, there's this longboard company called Bustin' Boards, and his buddy is like one of the founders of the company. So yeah, there's a bunch of neat stuff there. And then Vina's website is vinarao.com.
We'll have links to all that stuff when we post this over at projection-booth.com, where folks can go and check out more information. And yeah, definitely go over to pageantdocumentary.com and see the full film. Great stuff. It's nice. It's a slice of life for these two ladies and just brings up so many great issues. I mean, I had a nice spirited debate with the wife last night as we were rewatching this one. So it sparks conversation and it gets good things out there. And really kudos to you guys.
Thanks. Definitely. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Of course.
Yeah, and I also think what's really great too is that maybe even if you're not interested in the subject matter or you see the doc and you don't really, you know, the doc really goes over your head or you don't care about it, is that what Emily has to say, what you have to say about how to promote yourself, I think is valuable information for anyone who is an independent filmmaker in the current day.
Yeah, and you know, on that note, Melissa Silverstein, who runs Women in Hollywood, which is part of IndieWire, was nice enough to allow me to make a guest post. And if you, that's also, I cannot send you guys that link too. If you know you're not interested in plus size pageantry or the documentary, it's still a helpful read. I came up with basically five things that you can do to make your online premiere successful, or at least five things to think about. And it's called There She Is, From Film Festival Rejections to Online Success. And I'd be happy to send that article to you guys.
Yeah, definitely do. And we will post a link to that and definitely check it out, too. It sounds like something everybody should be reading.
Yeah, I think it's helpful. And if we could do it all over again, I definitely wish I would have known a lot of this stuff before we started. So I hope it helps other filmmakers and makes their film launch successful.